Welcome back to another episode of the Bear Performance Podcast. I am your host, Nick Bear, CEO and founder of Bear Performance Nutrition. And today I have a very exciting episode to share with you guys. This one has been a long one and it's been a long time coming. It is now April 2nd, 2021 that I'm recording this episode, but this is all about the sub 3-hour marathon that happened on January 30th, 2021. So it was a few weeks back, and I've had a lot of time to digest the race and the journey that it was to get there. And I really just want to break down that in itself, the journey to set the goal and accomplish a sub 3-hour marathon, and what it took, what it felt like that day of, my strategy going into, and everything about it. This one was not easy. This one was, for one, it wasn't an easy journey or an easy goal, but just making it happen during everything with COVID-19, races being canceled, just getting to this point, January 30th, was a journey in itself outside of all the training. So I kind of want to kick it off with talking about my running background in terms of marathons, and then talking about what I learned training for the sub 3-hour goal, setting up our own race, which we had to do because a lot of races were being canceled, and then race day itself and accomplishing that goal. So my final time on January 30th was 2 hours, 56 minutes, and 27 seconds. Now let's take that back to my first marathon, which was the Austin Marathon in 2018. And what's funny is I transitioned out of the military in 2017. And some of you guys might know this story, some may not. But when I transitioned out of the Army in 2017, I made a YouTube video and I kicked off that YouTube video saying, I will never run a day in my life again. Now that I'm out of the military, running for me is over. Those days are in the past and I'm moving forward. Days filled with strength and size, all in the gym. And that did not last long, obviously, because just a few months later, I was training for the Austin Marathon. And the Austin Marathon was in 2018, my first marathon, ended that race roughly around 3 hours and 59 minutes. And training for that, I mean, there was no really strategic plan going into that race. At the time, I was living between the warehouse here, which is in Round Rock, Texas, in downtown. So I was right between there. I was 15 minutes from the warehouse. I was 15 minutes from downtown off of a toll road. So running around my apartment at the time was kind of difficult. So I would just go out of my apartment and I would run along the toll road. I would run around this area called the Domain. I didn't wear a GPS watch. I didn't have a Garmin at the time. I wasn't tracking pace or anything. I would just go out and run. And my strategy for this first marathon was, you know, a couple days a week, I'd go out and run. And maybe I was running anywhere from 2 miles to 5 miles. Maybe. I really couldn't tell you. One of these days, I'll probably go back and just map out what my current run was to see how far I was running on a daily basis. And then on the weekends, I would have a long run. And that long run, you know, I look back and laugh, but that long run might have been anywhere from 6 miles to 8 miles. And I think the longest I ran before my first marathon in 2018 was probably 11 miles. That was my longest run. And I can tell you when I was running that marathon, I could tell that I was severely undertrained and unprepared because when I got to like mile 15, 16, I was just sucking. I cramped up so bad. So my first marathon, you know, sub 4 hours, which I was happy with, roughly right under sub four, like 3 hours, 59 minutes. And after that, I went back to strength training, bodybuilding. I was still running occasionally on the side, but I didn't plan on really running another marathon after that. And then towards the end of 2018, moving into 2019, I decided, you know, I'm going to run the Austin Marathon again. And if you've ever run the Austin Marathon, it is a tough course. I mean, it is full of rolling hills. It is not fast or flat by any means. It's not a PR course. And a lot of people actually in Austin who are competitive runners don't run the Austin Marathon because they're not going to get a really good time. With a marathon, You know, you're putting so much time into training, especially people who are competitive runners. You're putting so much time into a build of a race prep that when it's time to execute, that requires such a big effort, big energy, and a long recovery afterwards that you want to choose a course in a race where you can do your best. And I obviously learned that over time. I thought every marathon was the same. Hey, it's 26.2 miles. Doesn't matter if it's fast, flat, rolling hills, or mountains. And that's what I thought in the beginning. But towards the end of 2018, I decided I'm going to run the Austin Marathon again. And the Austin Marathon every year is in February. So I ran the Austin Marathon in 2019, being my second marathon, and my time was roughly 4 hours and 15 minutes. I did worse. I ran like 16 minutes slower this time. I was sitting a little heavier. You know, at this point in my life, I'm probably like 220, maybe 225 pounds with a big emphasis on strength training and putting on size. I was really into bodybuilding. I was really into powerlifting. I just loved it. And for me, running was something I did on the side. It was not a primary goal by any means. It was just one of those things that, yeah, I did after my strength training workouts. So marathon two was worse than marathon number one. Typically not how it happens. You're supposed to get better, right? Not worse. So after that second marathon, I went into an Ironman prep. And this is where I really started getting an itch and an addiction, if you will, for endurance training. And I went into about a 6 month Ironman prep. If you're not sure, an Ironman is a 2.4 mile swim, 112 mile bike, and a 26.2 mile run, a full marathon. And through that full Ironman prep, which was roughly 6 months, I learned a lot. I learned a lot about endurance training. And I ended up doing Ironman Florida, which was in Panama City. And my time was 11 hours and 28 minutes. And after I finished that, that was early November of 2019. As soon as I finished that Ironman, I had this newfound confidence. I announced on a YouTube video, and that YouTube video was published on November 13th, 2019. And it talked about my next fitness goal after the Ironman. And that fitness goal was a sub 3 hour marathon. I'm the type of person that I put things out there. And when I put it out there, it holds me accountable. It makes sure to me that other people are also holding me accountable. And I'm putting it in the universe to say, I'm going to do this. Watch me. And when I put that video out there, November 13th, 2019, there was so much criticism and doubt. There were so many people that doubted the fact that I would ever run a sub 3 hour marathon. They said never. You would never, ever, ever, ever do that. I mean, there's running forums all over the internet saying Nick Bear will never in his life run a sub 3 hour marathon. And that was just fuel to the fire, man. That was just fuel to the fire. And I knew in my head, after building a business from the ground up, after completing a ranger school, after just adversity in my life, things that I've had to go through, I know and I have the mindset that if there's something I want to do, it doesn't matter what it is. If there's something I want to do, I'm going to fucking do it. That's just the way I see a lot of things in my life. That's how I see everything in my life. And that's how you should too. I firmly believe that. So in November of 2019, I announced I'm going to run a sub 3 hour marathon. And my first attempt, and this was a bold move, my first attempt was just going to be a few months later in February at the Austin Marathon, which would be my third marathon. Now, to give some context, the marathon that I ran at Ironman Florida, you know, before this, I did a 2.4 mile swim, 112 mile bike, and then I had a marathon at the end. And this was a very flat and fast course. My marathon during the Ironman was 4 hours and 4 minutes. And I wanted to shave off over an hour in between early November and the middle of February, just a few months later. So I trained, I found a program online. I want to say I had a coach, but it wasn't really a coach. It was someone who just gave me some programming online. And I ran the Austin Marathon in 2020 in 3 hours and 24 minutes. And I remember that race like it was yesterday. I remember going into that race with very little strategy and thinking in my head, I can suck up anything for 3 hours. Mentally, I can drive through anything for 3 hours. If I just hold a 6:45 minute per mile pace for 3 hours, I will accomplish this goal. So I went into this race naive, stupid, and I guess uneducated with no strategy, with that mindset, that mentality. I wasn't going to race the course. I wasn't going to run the course. I was going to run it stupid. So I went that first 6 miles at the Austin Marathon in 2020. Now keep in mind, the first 6 miles is rolling hills. I mean, the Austin Marathon starts, you're running up South Congress, which is a hill for about a mile and a half. And I went out for this first 6 miles in the Austin Marathon. I was holding like a 6:20 pace. I was like, I'm going to buy myself some time. And after these big rolling hills in the first 6 miles, it hit me and I realized, shit, there's no way I'm going to do this. I've taxed myself. I've burnt myself out in the first 6 miles where I'm not going to be able to accomplish the goal of a sub 3. And I knew it 6 miles in. So the remaining 20 miles of that race was just a shit show. I had to end up walking the last couple miles. I was cramping up. I ran it so stupid. And I crossed that finish line dragging, like absolutely. We have some pictures from that race, and it looks like every piece of energy in life has just been sucked out of me as I'm crossing that finish line to run 3 hours, 24 minutes. And this was the middle of February, 2020. Now, between this race and January 30th, 2021, where I ended up running a sub-3-hour marathon, a lot happened. And it was just under a year, and I shaved off almost 28 minutes of my marathon time. I ended up hiring a professional coach during this time, hired Patrick Cutter, who helped me tremendously getting in better shape. During this time, we signed up for a bunch of marathons. We signed up for Eugene, Oregon, Grand Malls, Utah. There was a race in Texas we signed up for. And because of COVID-19, all of these races were getting canceled. Race after race after race was getting canceled. And after training for, you know, maybe 8 months, I decided I'm going to keep training, but I'm also going to move into another Ironman prep. So I moved my coaching over from Patrick to an Ironman coach. Working with Patrick was an amazing experience. He taught me so much. He's an amazing runner too. One of the reasons I worked with Patrick is because he's a bigger guy too and runs insane marathons. He's super fast. He's super fit, but he's also big and strong like me. But when I transitioned to Ironman prep, changed coaching because Patrick didn't do Ironman coaching or triathlon coaching. And when I transitioned to Ironman prep, the goal was still to run a sub-3-hour marathon. So I talked to my coach, Natasha. I worked with Natasha and Jeff Cunningham. Jeff was doing all the run programming. Natasha was doing all the triathlon Ironman programming. And I said, hey, I want to do an Ironman. At the time, it was Ironman Texas, which if you guys are following the journey, Ironman Texas was canceled and now we're doing Challenge Cancun. We're about a month out from that. But I said, hey, I want to transition to Ironman prep. And it was a crazy year. It's been a crazy year. But during the middle of that prep, I also want to run a sub-3-hour marathon. And they said, okay, let's do that. So we're trying to find a race. We're trying to find a marathon. All these marathons are getting canceled, delayed, changed, all this kind of stuff. And I got to a point where I was training with this group of runners, very talented runners in the Austin, Texas area. We would do all of our easy runs on our own, but we would meet up on Wednesdays and do tempo workouts and track workouts and some big workouts on Saturdays, like 17, 18, 20 milers, 22 milers at marathon pace. And I'd meet up with these very talented runners, and I was surrounded by these very talented runners. And we were all frustrated with the fact that these races kept getting canceled. And it felt like we were training for nothing. So we decided to create our own marathon. Just like another pivotal point of adversity in life, create the things that are being canceled. You know, just if there's something you want to do, just fucking do it. Create it. Make it happen. So we found a course. Natasha and Jeff knew someone who had this massive ranch land in the middle of nowhere, Texas, Central Texas. And we chose to do the race out on this ranch land because there were backcountry roads that had very little traffic, very little vehicles using these roads. We ended up getting the course certified. So someone came out, certified the course, put out course markings. It was all chip timed. So, you know, someone came out and actually certified the course, and we had a start line, a finished line. There were people monitoring the course. We had police at intersections making sure that no one was coming on the course. I mean, it was a legitimate race, and we had about 45 people running a marathon or half marathon on that course. And after we certified the course, everything was good to go. We decided this is where it's going to happen. This is where I'm going to do the sub 3 hour attempt. And that was January 30th, 2021. And I know the questions are popping up in people's heads, and I'm getting the question, how did you go from 3 hours, 24 minutes to 2 hours, 56 minutes, 27 seconds in less than a year, just under less than a year? And the journey in that year was so eye-opening and so rewarding in terms of what I learned about endurance training. And for me, I'm a person that likes to and enjoys learning from experience and practical application and throwing myself in there, submerging myself in the experience rather than just theory or reading about it. I've met so many people in the fitness space who talk about and preach things based off of things they've read or studied or have heard. And, you know, that holds weight in certain instances and certain places. But you can also, and I've talked about this many times before in a lot of aspects of life, not just fitness, business, relationships, you can tell when you've talked to someone about something and they've done it themselves. They have fully submerged themselves and experienced it. And it is so, so rewarding to hear from firsthand experience. So the way I learned so much about endurance training is by actually submerging myself in it and learning through experience. And it's been so rewarding, so rewarding. And one of the things that I learned early on that I was truly messing up on, like this is what was holding me back so much, was I would have these easy runs programmed into my training. And I mean, even when I did my first marathon, my second marathon, my third marathon, all of my training, I truly didn't have any easy runs, like quote unquote, easy zone two, maybe zone three, easy runs. I was always running too hard. I was trying to run too fast. If I had 5 miles to run that day, my goal was to run that 5 miles as fast and hard as possible. To me, easy runs, they didn't exist. Maybe this is just part of coming from the military, and this is how we ran in the military. Like if we had a run to do in the Army, every run was done at 100% effort. It was done as hard and as fast as possible. And one thing that I learned throughout this prep and through endurance training is that you truly need these slow, easy runs. These slow, easy runs, they are aerobic based. So maybe zone two, a little bit of zone three, where your heart rate is lower and you're building your aerobic foundation. You're building your aerobic base. The way to run faster is actually run slower. This didn't make sense to me in the beginning, but now 100%, like I know this is where I was messing up. All my runs prior to this past year were run too hard and too fast. And now if I have an easy run programmed, I'm going to run slow and I'm going to run easy. And I'm going to take it slow and I'm going to take it easy because I need to build this aerobic base. I need to build this aerobic foundation. And when you build this aerobic foundation and base, you can build off of that and get faster. So about 80 to 85% of my runs this past year, maybe even 80 to 90% of my runs were easy, slow runs where my heart rate was lower than 150 and I was in zone two, zone three. It was conversational. I could have a conversation during it. I wasn't super taxed at the end of this run. I was building my aerobic base. And we use the MAF method for a lot of these easy runs. Maffetone. So for the Maffetone method, essentially, it's to find your max aerobic heart rate. Not your max heart rate. Like my max heart rate might be 190, 200. This is your max aerobic heart rate. And for me, my max aerobic heart rate is 150. So using the Maffetone method, you take 180 minus your age. I'm 30 years old right now. So 180 minus 30 equals 150. 150 is my max aerobic heart rate, meaning I want to keep my heart rate lower than 150 to ensure that I am training aerobic conditions. I'm training my aerobic systems. So I would wear a chest heart rate monitor on all my easy runs, and that would sync via Bluetooth to my watch. I'm using all Garmin stuff, and I would monitor my heart rate the entire run. I would never look at pace. I would never look at distance. I would just monitor my heart rate for the entire run, and I'd keep it under 150. Generally, I would keep it anywhere from 135 to 145. I really didn't want to take it over 145, but using Maffetone method, typically you'll find your max aerobic heart rate, and then you'll subtract 10, and that is kind of the variance of where you want to keep it. So I'd want to, technically, based off math, keep my heart rate between 140 and 150 for true aerobic system running. And when you do that, when you keep your heart rate lower, below that max aerobic heart rate, you can build your aerobic systems. So by running slower, you can run faster. And then we would throw in one, maybe two, typically just one anaerobic system workout a week. And that was on Wednesdays. So Wednesdays, we would go downtown Austin, either to this 2 mile loop in the east side of Austin called the East Side Loop. And we do tempo workouts there, or we would go to the track at Austin High School and do 800 meter repeats, 1,000 meter repeats, 1,500, 1,600 meter repeats, mile repeats, stuff like that. So I'll give you an example of a workout that we would do on Wednesdays. And this is where we'd focus on speed. Say we're doing a tempo workout, 2 mile warm up at an easy pace, you know, maybe 820, 845 minute per mile pace, somewhere between there. And then a 4 to 6 mile tempo at like a 620 to 630 minute per mile pace. Take like a 2 minute rest. Do a 1 mile at a 615 pace. 1 minute rest. Another 1 mile to 615 pace. You know, 1 minute rest. And then a 2 mile cool down at an easy pace. Or we'd go to the track and do 2 mile warm up. Very easy. Maybe we do 10 800s at a 6 minute per mile pace with 1 minute rest in between and then a 2 mile cool down. So Wednesdays were always speed focused. And then the rest of the week, we just run on our own and do easy runs. And then the closer we got to the marathon on Saturdays, we'd have these big workouts at marathon pace. So maybe it'd be like a 1 mile warm up and then 4 miles at marathon pace being 6:45 minute per miles. And then an easy mile, and then 2 miles at 6:45, easy mile, 2 miles, 6:45, easy mile, stuff like that. So the closer we got through the build to the marathon, we'd have some big Saturday workouts honing in and focusing on marathon pace, because you don't want to just go into a marathon saying this is my marathon pace and not actually know what that feels like. So things I learned was run slower to get faster. 80 to 85% roughly are going to be easy aerobic based runs. And then maybe 10 to 15% of your weekly volume is going to be speed work, tempo runs, track workouts. And then fueling is another very important thing that I had to implement and learn on how to use appropriately. So what I realized is previously I was under fueling a lot of my workouts. I was under fueling during these long weekend runs. I was under fueling going into workouts, into runs. I was under fueling during marathons. So my primary source of fuel for all my training was our endurance formula G1M Sport. So each scoop of G1M Sport is 20 grams of carbs coming from clustered dextrin, which is very fast gastric emptying. It's easy on the stomach. and then 350 milligrams of sodium per scoop or per serving, and then a full electrolyte profile. So I never did a fasted workout in my last marathon build, meaning I always took some sort of fuel source prior to every single run. If I was going to do an easy 7 mile run, I was taking two scoops of G1M Sport before that run. If I was doing an easy 15 miler on the weekend, I was taking two scoops of G1M Sport before, and then I was sipping on two scoops of G1M Sport during in one of those handheld water bottles. And then in all the big workouts, we'd have hydration stations set up so we could keep fueling during those runs, a constant flow of fuel coming from carbohydrates and replenishing electrolytes to make sure we're not cramping up, to facilitate muscle contraction and performance. Because as soon as you're underfueled, when you stop adding a fuel source like carbohydrates and you stop replenishing electrolytes, your performance decreases dramatically. So fueling and honing in and using fuel as a source for all my workouts, all my training, another massive thing that we implemented in this past year. But what you can't replace is just time on your feet. I mean, with anything else, you have to just put the miles in. And over that year of training, going from a 324 marathon to a 256.27 marathon, there were a lot of miles put on my feet, my legs. My weekly average volume was roughly 55 to 60 miles of running per week. But that second half of that year was also a lot of training for Ironman too. So I was cycling, I was strength training, I was swimming. I'm working a lot of different exercises to build my aerobic base and anaerobic systems. You know, I'm building strength through cycling and weight training. I'm building my aerobic base through easy cycling and swimming and easy runs. So it was like this combination of all of these things that came together to make me stronger leading into the race for January 30th, 2021. So we build. Volume gets higher. We taper about 2 to 3 weeks going into the race. We started the taper like that first week of January. And if you're not familiar, a taper is where you start reducing intensity and volume of training in order to be at 100% physically and mentally ready and prepared for race day. So you build, intensity builds, volume builds, and then about 3 weeks out from a race, you slowly start pulling away and decreasing intensity and volume so that you're fully rested, recovered, and ready to race on race day. The build went amazing. It went just to plan. The taper went amazing, went just to plan. Everything was going super well. I mean, super well. It couldn't have gone any better. The build was great. The taper was great. The course was certified. Race day was ready to go. We were just had to race at that point. You know, the saying that everyone was telling me at that point is, hey, the hay is in the barn. And I love that. Like, the hay is in the barn. The work is done. Now you just got to race your race. So we wake up the morning of January 30th, 2021. And I remember my dad says, hey, it's supposed to be a little windy today. You know, we didn't have any wind for all of the entire prep. And we ended up having 20 mile per hour winds the day of the race. I think for one, that was a great way to make it an honest course, an honest race, and truly test me. Conditions were not optimal. The course that we made was out back. And it was roughly 6.5 miles out, 6.5 miles back. And you did that twice. And when you reached about mile 3 going out, you hit this hill. And this hill was about a mile and a half long. And I remember race day. We'll start getting into race day now. We'll kind of talk on race day nutrition as well. So I woke up, let's back up a little bit. I woke up about, the race started at 7, woke up at like 3:30. And I woke up and around 4 a.m., I had about 100 grams of carbs. I believe I had two scoops of G1M Sport. I had a banana. I had an English muffin with peanut butter, honey, and jelly. And that's what I had at like 4 a.m. And then we ended up driving to the race. On the way to the race, I was sipping on two scoops of G1M Sport. So an additional 40 grams of carbs, 700 milligrams of sodium. And that's what I wanted to have in my body prior to starting this race. Lots of carbs, lots of sodium. I wanted to be topped off. And I did do a carb load 4 days leading into the race. So I probably had about 600 grams of carbs per day the 4 days leading into the race. And during this carb load, I ended up reducing dietary fat intake. I ended up reducing dietary protein intake. I didn't want calories to get much higher. I just wanted to put an emphasis on carbohydrate intake to top off glycogen stores in the muscle and the liver that the body could use as fuel during the marathon. And that's the intent of a carb load. You want to top off glycogen stores, which are an easy source of energy for the body during like a race. So glycogen's topped off, hydration's topped off with water and sodium and electrolytes over those days leading up to. And the day of the race, like I said, my dad told me, hey, it's going to be windy, 20 mile per hour winds. The course, like I said, 6.5 miles out, 6.5 back, do that twice. And I remember we took off and I felt great. Like taking off for that run, I felt amazing. I felt fast. I felt smooth. Heart rate was staying low. And about 3 miles in, you hit this hill. And we hit this hill. And like I said, it's about a mile and a half up. And when we hit this hill, there was this massive headwind hitting us. So you're running up this hill for a mile and a half. Headwind's just driving into you. And I remember getting to the top of this hill and thinking and even saying to Keegan, Keegan was running next to me. I said, that was a lot bigger of an effort to put out than I wanted to this early on. And that kind of made me nervous. I didn't want to put out that big of an effort early on because, you know, my heart rate got elevated, strained a little bit to get up that hill into that headwind. And the best way to describe it is, have you ever seen the movie Ford versus Ferrari? This was really eye-opening for me, like this analogy. In the movie Ford versus Ferrari, they have the vehicle, and the vehicle is pushing RPMs. So when it pushes RPMs, that's like the effort the vehicle is giving. And you never really want a red line. You don't want to take your vehicle past the red line of RPMs, because if you take the vehicle past the red line of RPMs, that's when the engine can brake, it can shut down, your vehicle is just done for, right? So a lot of times when they're driving these race cars and these vehicles, like in the movie Ford versus Ferrari, they'd push the cars too hard, too early on, it would go over the red line, it would smoke, the engine would break, they'd drive off the course and they'd be done. So the intent of these drivers was to race these vehicles to as close as red line as possible. Push these vehicles, these cars, as hard as possible, close to that line, but not go over the line. You want to push it at threshold. You want to push it to almost touching red line, but not red line. The body is the same way. You want to push the body to a threshold where it can hold that pace, it can hold that speed for a long period of time. But if you cross the red line, if you cross that threshold too early on or too often, well, the engine's going to break down on you. Your body's going to break down on you. And when I went up that hill in that headwind to hold the pace I wanted to hold, I think I ended up crossing that red line a little bit. I pushed over threshold a little bit too early on, and I thought that was going to hurt me. So I have my paces in front of me right now. The first couple of miles, mile one was at 6:43, mile two, 6:43, mile three, 6:44, mile four, 6:41, mile five, 6:40, mile six, 6:47. So those first 6 miles, I was holding really good pace. And what ended up happening and going through my head was I was thinking, I know I'm going to hit this hill again. And I know when I hit this hill again, it's going to do the same thing. It's going to be a big push. It's going to be a big effort. And if the wind is still there, it's going to take a lot out of me. And I'm going to be sucking to get back and run the sub three. So after mile six, I started picking up my pace a little bit. And they always say you can't bank time in a marathon. And my coach was even telling me this, don't try to bank time. But in my head, I know my body. I said, I need to run some faster miles earlier on a flatter, faster part of the course to make up for when I hit that headwind and it takes a massive amount of energy out of me. Now, I'm a bigger guy, and when I run hills or I push out these bigger efforts and my heart rate becomes elevated, it kills my endurance and it can hurt my endurance. So I start picking up pace a little bit. It's like mile 7, 635, mile 8, 631, mile 9, 627, mile 10, 626, mile 11, 634, mile 12, 633, mile 13, 631. So I started picking up pace a little bit in preparation for when I was going to hit that hill again. And I was holding roughly between like a 635 and a 642 for pretty much the remainder of that race. But when I ended up hitting that hill, I hit that hill and I was running in the sevens for about a mile and a half. Low sevens, which was okay because I banked some that time, but I knew I was going to put out a big effort there. So even though I was running slower up that hill the second time, my heart rate was the highest it's been during the race. Based off of my watch, it says I was running about a 180 heart rate, which, you know, watch heart rate is a little bit different than chest strap heart rate. It's not as accurate. So take that with a grain of salt. So we turn around after hitting that hill for the second time, and I'm feeling good. I'm hurting from that hill and that effort pushing out. But at that point, you know you have about 6.5, 7 miles of work left to get across the finish line. And up until this point, I'm not cramping it at all. We had water stations set up where I could grab G1M Sport along the side of the course. So I'm getting in fuel from Cluster Dextrin being a carbohydrate source. And I'm topping off with electrolytes as we're running the course. I mean, we have hydration stations set up just like any other marathon or Ironman would. It was set up very well. And a mile, maybe 22, mile 23, I started to feel my hamstring grab a little bit, which meant a cramp was coming. And I had a base salt stick with me, which is essentially like an emergency salt stick. I'd carry these with me during Ironman Florida. And I believe each base performance salt stick, I mean, it's literally just a container of salt, has about 10,000 milligrams of sodium in there. I use them for like emergencies if I'm starting to cramp up. And this is where I made a mistake is I took out the base performance salt stick. I ate half of it because I was like, I need salt right now. I need sodium right now to avoid cramping. Ate half of it, washed it down with some water on the side of the course. And it instantly made me feel sick. So the cramps are gone, but I'm feeling like I'm about to throw up now, you know, mile 22-ish. And I'm like kind of in my head, I'm like, don't throw up, don't throw up. Hold 645 paces, hold 645 paces. So like mile 22 is at 640 pace, mile 23, 640 pace, mile 24, 648, mile 25, 644, mile 26, 702. So like I said, mile 22, 23 started cramping up. Cramps went away with the base performance salt stick. And then that last mile, the cramps came back. And I could see the finish line and the cramps came back. And if you watch the video, the sub-3-hour documentary that we have on YouTube, you'll see me kind of waddling in to the finish line because the cramps came back literally that last mile. And that last 200 meters, I ended up like waddling in to cross the finish line at 2 hours, 56 minutes, 27 seconds, baby. And that felt so good. Felt so good to cross that finish line at sub-3. You know, and the whole time I knew I was on pace. I knew that as long as I could hold pace and not cramp up, not redline, I was going to hit sub-3. And when I hit mile 22, and I saw my coach, Jeff Cunningham, and he said, hey, man, you got it. You literally just have a hold. I think I had a hold like 7:30s at that point or something like that to cross the finish line under sub-3. And Natasha yells out, and she's like, it's not a matter of if you're going to run sub-3 at this point. It's by how much are you going to run sub-3 at this point. And crossing the finish line at 2 hours, 56 minutes, and seeing my friends, my family, the BPN team yelling and cheering, you know, they knew, and I knew, but they knew too. A lot of them saw it. They saw the journey it was the past year of training for and the miles put in and the work put in and just showing up consistently every single day to run that sub three. That was a good feeling. And it goes back to, if there's something you want to do, if there's something that I want to do, I know it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. And we set these goals internally. I set these goals for myself. We set the goals for the team, the BPN team. We set revenue goals. We set milestones. And we know it's not a matter of if we're going to reach them. It's a matter of when and by how much are we going to blow past these goals. And I by no means never ran this race for the people who doubted me or didn't believe in me, because I knew I was going to do it the entire time. But it felt really good to show that when I set my mind to something, and people say they're focused, but when I set my mind to something and the people around me know it, I am 100% dedicated and focused to making that happen. Like, to me, that is what I wake up thinking. That is what I go to sleep thinking. When I'm eating, that's what I'm thinking about. When I set these goals, and they're big goals, they're not easy goals, but when I set them, I'm fully ready to commit every part of my life to accomplishing that goal, because that's what matters at the moment. And that's what I want to do, and that's what I'm going to do. And this sub 3 hour journey, this marathon journey, is just an example of that. It's just to show that you don't have to be born with all the skills. You don't have to be born with all the gift and the talent. But if you just show up consistently, that consistency compounds over time, and it helps you reach anything you want to do and everything you want to do. It's just showing up consistently. And like I said, consistency compounds. So that's the journey. That's the journey of going from first marathon, 359, second marathon, 415, third marathon, 324, fourth marathon, 2 hours, 56 minutes, 27 seconds. That's a sub 3 hour marathon journey. So thanks for tuning in. Thanks for being a part of this journey and this story. I truly appreciate the support from so many people. And just a reminder that if there's something you want to do, you can fucking do it, because you can do whatever you want to.